Things I can think that I love better. But there aren't many things that get me more than driving. I love to drive. The sound of those windshield wipers. The feel of those wheels under your bottom. The sense of, I don't know, oneness, being part of a machine. Maybe this is a male thing, a 20th century male thing, but I don't think there's a man alive who secretly to himself not said at one time or another, when the sun is coming streaking down through those Venetian blinds of his existence and he can see those little flecks of dust floating around his life, what I'd like to do is just get in that driver's seat and drive to the ends of the earth. I have a suspicion that I was born with a Pontiac under me, or an Olds, or a Fiat, or a Ferrari, or an Aston Martin, or a Bentley, or a Triumph. Great names, cars, and I love to drive. Look at that. Nothing ahead of us but that fantastic sea of existence. We can go any place. All right, let's get this thing started. Oh, listen to that motor. Listen to the sound of that engine. There's just nothing like it. Okay? Here we go.
Oh, I'm looking at the world through a windshield. And I see everything a little bit different light. I got a sweet little thing I'm wanting to see in Nashville. Long strips of rubber that you see were burn off of this rig by the likes of me, and they'll rock along the highways in this land. I'm gonna sign my name in this diesel smoke and let the ones that come along behind me choke and try to beat this a pace I'm a taking the time they can. Oh, I'm looking at the world through a windshield, watching it fly by me on the right.
Listen to the sound of those infernal windshield wipers. I wonder how many fantastic dramas in our lives have been played out to the sound of those wipers. Incredible love scenes in the front seat of battered Oldsmobiles. Tremendous fights between husband and wives. A total emergency of suddenly losing your left rear tire while you're on your way to a tremendous date and you're on the turnpike of existence. And the rain is coming down and you got your new sport coat on. And you sit in the front seat and hear nothing but even been many of you, probably more of you than you suspect, who were conceived with the sound of windshield wipers playing quietly in the background. what Ludwig von Beethoven could have done with that. Thump. 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 Windshield wipers wiping away all the evil of the earth.
By and by.
Oh, look at those palm trees. I'll tell you, this is one of my absolutely favorite activities, driving. I love to drive. In fact, my old man used to have a maxim. He says, if you meet a guy who don't know how to drive and who wears bow ties, watch out for him. This guy's dangerous. Anybody with glands loves to drive. Right out there is the Gulf of Mexico. You know, I think people who think that cars are status symbols have completely missed the whole point of driving. You know, usually people who say that are people who don't drive or don't own a car. And I know it pollutes the atmosphere. I know all those things, so don't write in and tell me about it. I know all about it. But the fact still remains that that car represents to almost everybody who loves cars freedom. I mean, it shakes you loose from the earth, you know? As long as you've got a car out there in the garage, you know that you can get in it. Just go. It doesn't even have to be in the garage. You can be sitting out there with a curb. Just the knowledge that you know you can go. You know, back in the days of the Old West, a horse was the most important thing that a man could own because it meant safety for him. It meant that he was free. He could move across the landscape. He wasn't bound to one rock, one piece of soil. And that tradition, you know, still is with us. I think the Americans, because we have a fantastically vast continent, I think that we would feel like we were lost on the surface of the sea if we didn't have a car. We're moving people. Love to move. In fact, some of the most dramatic and traumatic things that ever happened to me in a car. And, of course, some of them I can't talk about on television. Well, I'll never forget one night in the Pontiac in a drive-in in Griffith, Indiana. It's fantastic. It's a personal legend. I think of it sometimes. You know, I can see the day in the future when some president, when there's a car in the Smithsonian Institute, Chevy station wagon, that says, in this Chevy station wagon, President Charles W. Applewright began life. And you know, the car, it's more than just a set of wheels, friend. It's a bedroom, it's a living room. To many people, it's almost life. You know, one of the first things that people who are downtrodden want out of life, all over the world, it's not only America, one of the first things they want is a car. You know, some neat guy came up to that stop street. I can't even remember when I couldn't drive. Seems like living out in Indiana, you know, you had nothing but flat prairies and plains. You learned to drive just about the time you learned to walk. And I can remember my old man sitting at the wheel. He was incredible at the wheel of a car. The car grew out of him. It was like a shell on a turtle or something. He'd sit in that car, you know. Oh, man, he just moved. And I'm a little kid, see, I'm sitting back in the back seat. I'm watching him, learning about life. On a Saturday morning, the old man would drive down the street, you know, taking us out for a ride, going down to the A&P, that fourth-hand Oldsmobile. That baby had not had shocks for 15 years. We go from pothole to pothole. The old man is planted, you know. Once in a while, the front end would start to shimmy. It didn't have any kingpins in it, you know. He'd hit a railroad track, or he'd hit a pothole. You'd see his shoulders bulging. Boy, he didn't let that car get away from him. And then he would, all the while, would he drive. That'll take care of that one. All the while when he's driving, he's contacting the other drivers, the guys like him who grew up in cars. And their language is pouring out. Gomez looking out. Once in a while, they give a signal, you know, like that. The language is pouring out of them. It always reminds me, you know, every time I see a TV commercial. You know, so many TV commercials take place in a car. And I saw one not long ago where the station wagon showed up.
White line fever. A sickness born down deep within my soul. White line fever. The years keep flying by.
Isn't it beautiful? Oh, my fellow travelers. Oh, America's on the road. It's too bad you can't see up there. There's a flock of ducks in a V formation just going right over my head. Maybe you can pick them up out there. See them? Look at that. Beautiful. Well, there was a commercial I saw the other day. You know, it reminds me of the old man. Beautiful scene comes on the television screen. It's in color, see? And you see these four people in the commercial. The old man, the father, see? He's a typical TV daddy, you know, the kind of sits there. You know, that kind of guy, you know, he's made out of lanolin, you know? Easy to manage, soft and silky. This guy never gives a discouraging word to anybody. And he's completely under the thumb of everybody else in the family. Sitting next to him is his wife. Typical TV mother. She's about 13. Got this beautiful profile, a set of teeth. And you know how these TV girls are always flipping their hair back, their hair is streaming back, and they're driving along in a station wagon. And in the back seat are these two kids, you know, jumping up and down. They're typical television kids, you know. You know, they're kind of, hey, daddy, daddy, you know. And sitting in the middle of them all is this great big dog. The fantastic dog, with big jowls. Looks around. He's a television dog. He's kindly intelligent. Looks a little like Bertrand Russell, you know. Looking around. And it is an American family. An American television commercial family. And I'm sitting there watching them, see? On my color TV set. It looks like paradise. I couldn't help but think how my family, when I was a kid, would have played that commercial. To begin with, it would have been shot in black and white. Grainy black and white, 8mm. And it'd come on, you know, if you see it on the screen, it would come on the screen, you know, the little sprocket holes are catching a bit. And then you see from the left side of the screen, you see this fourth-hand Oldsmobile covered with crud, hopping from pothole to pothole. Somebody's written a big four-letter word on the side, you know, in the parking lot. The old man doesn't care. He might have written it down there. I don't know. We come popping into the scene. Here's the old man sitting there. He's got his sweaty T-shirt. Been wearing it since last Wednesday. It's Saturday morning now. It says, I'm a Chicago White Sox fan on the front of it, you know. He carried his shame proudly. He's got a two-day growth of beard. He stopped shaving late Thursday night. He figured he could stretch it through Friday, you know. And now here it is Saturday morning. We're on the way to the ball game. That's the way that scene would have been played. What do they do on a television commercial? Daddy's sitting there, and all of a sudden, you know, there's always a crisis in a commercial. Like Daddy runs away with the right guard, which is a major crisis at home. You know? That's an American crisis. Boy, what a rotten person that is. Takes the right guard right out of his own family's armpit. A guy like that would do anything. Well, here's this typical TV daddy sitting there seeing. Camera dollies in on his face, and all of a sudden he makes this face. That's TV pain. Oh, I'm suffering from... Oh, forget that ball game, kids. Oh,
I'm suffering from a severe gastric distress.
A severe gastric distress. I can imagine how my old man would have said it.
Forget that ball game. Oh, my God.
That's the way the old man would have said it. Well, instantly, what does the wife do?
It's commercial. She reaches down into this beautiful $1,200 Bonwit Teller bag made out of 5 alligators. $1,200, she reaches down in there. She says, here, Charles, you promised the truth of the ball game. Try this. It's the product. You can hear the music swelling in the background. And the old man looks at it. See, everybody at TV, if you're a daddy, you can be 42 and you never heard a tooth mouthwash, you never heard a tooth flush, anything like that. He looks over and says, what's that? But she says, here, try this, Chuck. Chuck pops it in his mouth. Why, say, why, it does taste like a fine Swiss chocolate. By George, I feel fine. It's an instant TV cure. 12.5 seconds. Guy feels great. And out or off the Little League game. The kids are jumping up and down. I think of the way my dad would have played that. I could just hear him hollering. Forget that ball game. Oh, my God. My mother, she's sitting over there, you know, she's got these aluminum rheostats in her hair. She always wore them on a Saturday morning. She's got this Chinese red rump-sprung chenille bathrobe. It's got a little petrified egg on a lapel. She's sitting there looking out the window. The old man hollers, oh, my God. She says, no wonder you slob after last night. You and Gert started to drink all the beer in the Bluebird Tavern. Slob, you should have a gut ache. Oh, knock it off! I'm sitting back there thinking. I'm learning from the manager. And then my mother reaches into her Carmen Miranda bag, you know, the one with the plastic apples and oranges, the plastic bananas all over it, that she got at Montgomery Ward. She reaches down into it and takes this thing out and says, here's where it is. You know, what is? Are you out of your parents? Beat a minute? Out the window it goes. And then, of course, my kid brother and me both start yelling, yeah, the bargain, the bargain. He doesn't miss a beat. He doesn't even look back. He's moving that car like a massive. With one fell swoop, boom, he gets me on the side of the head. Wham, he gets the kid brother on the back end. That takes care of the kid. The last scene would be a shot behind the Sherwin-Williams paint sign. The old man let me go. Yep. Something about a car. I don't know. It's sex. It's freedom. It's life. It's fight. It's truth and it's beauty. It's Christopher Columbus and his galleon. It's Alan Shepard on his way to the moon. I got to admit it. I love my car. I love to drive. Look at those palm trees. I'll give it a little gas and start moving on out. Oh, feel that breeze blowing in from that window. I look to drive and the window's open. Yep. There ain't a man watching me tonight. Doesn't know what I'm talking.
White line fever, my soul. White line fever. The years keep flying by like the highline pole. Wrinkles in my forehead show the miles I've put behind me. They continue to remind me how fast I'm growing old. Guess I'll die with this fever in my soul. I wonder just what makes a man keep pushing on. Why must I keep on singing this old highway song? Yeah, I've been from coast to coast 100 times or more. And I've seen one single place where I ain't been before. White line fever. A sickness born down deep within my soul.
Yeah, there it is. The end of the road. There's nothing beyond it. Nothing. You know, friend, I wonder how many people are on a road and they don't even know they're on a road. And a lot of them are at the end of it and have been at the end of it for a long time and they just didn't even know they were on one. Do you have a sneaking suspicion that you're at the end of the road and you don't know what to do about it? Sneaking suspicion that you're on the same road that I'm on. That long yellow brick road that leads to the Emerald City. There ain't nothing beyond it.
Guess I'll die with this fever.